Think about the last time you were at a vending machine. What kind of selections did you see behind that case? Chances are it was a collection of quick fixes, like a Reese's peanut butter cup, and maybe a Twix. Two for me, none for you. Or some salty chips. And as much as I love a good treat, too many of those snack attacks can turn into energy attacks, sapping your mind, body, and spirit. Ashley Nicholson experienced this dearth of options while spending frequent time in the hospital with both her parents. She set out to do something about it, creating BTR Nation to deliver healthy snacks that actually taste good. While BTR Nation hasn't invaded vending machines, at least not yet, you can buy their products online or in stores around the country. We're chatting about one of the company's failed flavors, the marketing channels BTR Nation has found most successful, and the best artists to throw on during a run. A quick housekeeping note, this is episode 199, and next week, episode 200 will be the final episode of Good People, Cool Things. We'll dive into all of that next week. But for now, we've got a wonderful episode to get to. I'm Joey Held. This is Good People, Cool Things. And here's my conversation with Ashley Nicholson. To start, can you give us your name and your elevator pitch, but also the elevator that we're riding on?
Yes. So I am Ashley Nicholson. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief snack officer of BTR Nation. And BTR Nation is on a mission to fix our broken food system one snack at a time. So we do that by taking all of the junk out and infusing all the good for you, nutrient-dense superfoods in.
I love it. And where did the idea for this come from? Because I mean, I know because I have seen your website and I prepared, but for people who maybe haven't, where did this idea come from? Because I think it's super interesting.
Yeah. So actually, you know, very unlikely time, unlikely place. A lot of founders start their companies as really a solution to a personal problem. And I did the same. So both of my parents were very, very sick, diagnosed with very rare forms of cancer a couple years apart from each other. And I spent most of my days for 4+ years eating absolute junk out of hospital vending machines and cafeterias. And it's really very ironic how the worst possible food in the world is, or in the country, I should say, is in hospitals where people need it the most, including doctors, nurses, where you need to be on your game, yet all of the vending machines are full of absolute junk with ingredients you can't pronounce and 45 grams of sugar in a little candy bar. It's pretty wild. So I took to the kitchen to create something that was better, and I started making these plant-based bites in my kitchen that were boosted with plant protein. They had really cool superfoods in them that are now considered very trendy and everyone loves them, but like 10 years ago, people were like, what is this? And it's what you would get in like a natural health food store or co-op. And it was a game changer for me because I was my parents' caretaker. I needed to be on my game. I was their proxy. And I just felt absolutely horrible eating every single meal from a cafeteria. So my parents loved them. Other caretakers, doctors, nurses, they were like, these are really good. And you know, my dad was like, I think you have something here. And my father was always an entrepreneur at heart. He would have loved to be a part of this business, and his legacy is still. So before he passed away, he incorporated the company and said, you know, I hope you do something with this one day. I think this could really crush it. And BTR stands for Be Bold, Tenacious, and Resilient. And that's, he coined that mantra. And that is what the company represents and stands for. And we are here using this platform to try to educate consumers on what they're consuming and what actually goes into our food system. And we're trying to do better.
And I actually have not a similar story of starting a business, but of one of my parents being in the hospital, and I went down to the vending machine. And this was my first time trying Charleston Chews because there's just so few options. Like there was so little in there. And I was just like, you know what? None of these look great, but I want to try something new. So let's try. And it's not a bad snack, but it's not a healthy one for sure.
Exactly. And it's, you know, we actually have had several videos go viral on TikTok and Instagram around this. And usually it's because people are like, yeah, you know, we should change vending machines. We should change our food system. But there's always the haters. You're always going to find people, especially in the food system, who is like defending their like big food companies. And usually, though, it's the fact that, well, don't take away my, you know, blank peanut butter cups. Don't take away my blank chocolate bar. I totally get it. It's more about actually choice. And I think that's what's limiting in our food system is – there's actually not a lot of choice. It's really the same major food companies that are making decisions for us. And then they acquire smaller companies and then change the recipes of the smaller companies that were trying to do something different. And it's really, really challenging to actually bring something that's totally different to market. And that's what we're trying to do. And consumers are asking for it. So, you know, with hundreds of thousands of people who are super excited that nothing on the market like this exists and can also taste really good. So I think that that's the key component, is the taste has to be there. Because in the beverage world, or in like supplements, and I come from the supplement industry, I think people will just be like, oh, it's a greens powder. Like, I'll just throw it back because it's good for me. But food, like, has to taste good first and foremost. And then people get excited that, oh, wow, it's got these benefits. It's good for me. But at first has to be the taste. And we're always iterating and making sure that what's in the market, people are just like, can't get enough of.
And we always love a good failure story here on this podcast. So when you've been iterating, has there been a flavor where you're like, this is going to be fantastic, and then it comes out and it's just a hot mess?
Yes, we do. So I'll tell you the story of salted caramel, or caramel, however you want to pronounce it. We were so excited to be able to create this salted caramel flavor. And we were like, no one has ever done this before without natural flavors. So I sometimes go on my soapbox about natural flavors because it has the word natural in it. You think, like, this is good for me. This is good for my body. There's actually about 50 to 100 different sub-ingredients and additives that go into making a natural flavor. So you don't really know exactly what you're consuming. And that's my biggest pet peeve. It's like, if I'm going to eat a piece of cake or a cupcake, and we eat sugar in this house, like, I totally get it. Like, when I want dessert that's full sugar, I'm going for the big chocolate chip cookie. But I just want to know what I'm consuming. And this is my biggest pet peeve in the industry, is there's a lot of deception with ingredient labels. So every single product that's out there that says salted caramel, that has that's lower in sugar, has some type of flavor agent in it. And I was like, we're going to do it without a flavor agent. We're going to make it with nature. And we made it with a superfood called lacuma, because lacuma has like that little bit of like smokiness, and it kind of gives a little bit of that caramel maple sugar flavor without using a flavor agent. Literally, it's a superfood. It did not taste at all like salted caramel. Like, it completely fell flat. It was very good, but it was more of like this maple nutty flavor. We couldn't figure it out. So we were like, we're going to put it to the side. And that happens very frequently, because we bring flavors to market that you could only find in nature. So like, our strawberry shortcake bar has real strawberries. Our banana nut bar has real bananas. And that, you would think, is just common sense and a no-brainer, but 99% of bars or cookies that have strawberry shortcake or strawberry, like, do not have strawberries in it. It's pretty wild that we're so used to this on our taste buds. And it's just, the food industry has kind of manipulated our taste buds. So it's something I could talk about for probably way too long. So you can totally cut me off. But that is a good failure story of the fact that sometimes you just, you know, you try, and I think we have tried like 18 different recipes and versions of it, and we were like, can't get it off the ground and actually call it salted caramel. So that was a failure.
So do you still have a dream that perhaps the 19th iteration could work, or is it, there's enough out there for other options?
That's a good question. I think if the masses come to us, and I think for me, I had this dream, I love caramel, but until I really became educated about what it is, and true caramel is sugar. So if I'm going to eat like true caramel, I know I'm going to have like a heaping of sugar, and that's totally fine, but I probably wouldn't bring an item to market that has that much sugar in it. So that's one of our criteria, is we want to be lower in sugar, but not like, we are a keto product, we're keto friendly, but we're really focused on moving people away from like these diet tribes, and more focused on, we want people to just know that like, you can enjoy something and it be super delicious without it having like 20 grams of sugar. Maybe it has 2 grams of sugar. So that's really what our focus is, but you can't bring something salted caramel without the sugar. But one of these days, maybe we'll go back to the drawing board and see. We get a lot of requests for like birthday cake and cookies and cream. And I'm like, well, birthday cakes don't grow on trees. So it's not going to be the same like birthday cake flavor that you have that nostalgia for. It's going to be different. And that's because we have to use like what's at our disposal, like vanilla and cinnamon and things that you might not find in like an artificially flavored birthday cake cookie. And that's why we're doing all of this education around the brand as well.
Yeah, that feels like more of maybe like a tiramisu perhaps could be a little more on brand. I don't know.
Sounds really yummy, actually. So that sounds good. I mean, because now you're sparking the innovation. So we always have something new around the corner. And we actually do have two new innovations we're launching into the market in May. So it's right around the corner.
Well, I look forward to seeing all of them. The caramel conversation. I guess I should say caramel since I grew up in the Midwest, but down here in Texas, they say caramel. So.
Caramel.
But when I was a kid, I had only really had it occasionally, you know, as a topper, as many people do.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I thought, why don't I just have a bowl of this? Like, that would be so good. And I have never seen a food not disappear. Like, I was eating so much and it just would keep refilling any holes I made, and that was my failure.
It is so good though. I don't know, where did you grow up? You said the Midwest.
Yeah, in the Chicago area.
So I have this core memory that just like popped into my brain, because I come from a big Italian family, so food was always super important to us. But we never, you know, I'm a 90s baby. We ate Pop Tarts, right? Like for breakfast, that was like, and Lucky Charms. Like we never really looked at ingredient labels like we do now. And it's just, I have this core memory of going to the mall. I grew up in New York and we had this restaurant, chain restaurant called Friendly's. I don't even think they're around anymore, but they used to have these ice cream sundaes and they were topped with caramel and it was like so delicious and probably full of tons of chemicals, but it was so yummy. And what we're trying to do is like take these nostalgic flavors and clean them up and make them better for you, but also not say something is like salted caramel if it doesn't taste like that. I think that's the really important thing, is we want to deliver on our message. So we have flavors like cinnamon cookie dough and dark chocolate brownie because it literally tastes like a dark chocolate brownie. So, but we wouldn't call it like milk chocolate brownie because it doesn't taste like milk chocolate. It's definitely darker. So really trying to like meet consumer expectations. I have learned so much starting this business about how people perceive things and how consumers purchase things. It's pretty wild.
I do want to follow up on that, but I'm curious, since we're talking about Pop-Tarts. I just learned about this Pop-Tart movie that's coming out. That's I think Jerry Seinfeld wrote it. He's definitely in it. And it's
I watched the
trailer and like Bill Burr is John F. Kennedy.
Okay.
And Melissa McCarthy's in like every single scene.
Wow.
I recognized 12 people in it. It seems like everyone in the comedy. Yes.
Is it like the origin of Pop-Tarts?
I think it's supposed to be. Yeah. It's like Kellogg versus Post. And
I believe
it's called Unfrosted. I just watched this a day or two ago, so I should know this. But
okay, I'm gonna Google this after this, because it's I mean, the Pop-Tart, right? That's another thing. It's like we get consumers that are like, well, what is your product like? And nowadays, like everyone has to be like something that existed for 100 years, but 100 years ago, you know, post Kellogg, they were paving the way. Like there was like Raisin Bran wasn't a thing. And Pop-Tarts, these like toaster pastries that come out of your toaster, like that's brand new. So it's just so interesting how brands nowadays are like, we have to reinvent everything that happened 100 years ago and then make it better for you. But if we try to do something new, people are like, ooh, I don't know what this is. It's so interesting I think about this a lot, because as we do a lot of innovation and we like to put new things in the market and people like fall in love with them, but they can't like put their finger on, like, they're like, oh, there's nothing like it out there. Like, that's the point. And then they're like, okay, great. This is totally new. So it's just so interesting to see. So I'm really excited for this Pop-Tart movie. I can't wait.
Yeah, it looks pretty goofy, but I mean, you'd expect that, I think, with the cast.
With the cast, yeah. I'm excited. I love Melissa McCarthy, so my favorite.
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful, wonderful. Now, go back to the business side of things. You said you've learned so much. What's something that surprised you in running this business?
Oh my goodness. I get surprised every day. I think what has surprised me the most, I'll take a learning from this week, is how quick as a founder and an entrepreneur, you just like bounce back from things. Like whether it's like amazing news or like, okay, I have this fire to put out, and like you could be making multi-million dollar decisions and then like a second later, you're doing something completely different. And it's wild, because I think about myself, like when I was in college and I was, you know, very type A perfectionist control freak and like had to have my whole day scheduled like by the minute. And now it's like, I do obviously have a schedule, but you're doing a million things and your hands are in a million different buckets and you have to make decisions quickly. You have to be nimble and you just have to go with it and have full confidence in yourself. Even if you're feeling that imposter syndrome, like you have to go with it. You are setting the tone for your company, for your brand, and that's what matters. So it's like, you have to be so on point and so focused in your head. So whatever it takes to get you there, whether it's meditating, breath work, reading like 20 pages in the morning, whatever it takes, you have to get in that like Zen mode that nothing can touch you.
I like it. And you kind of touched on this a little bit, that you've had success with TikTok and Instagram. Has there been a marketing channel that you've like, I don't want to say surprised again, but like that has really had good results for you?
So I'm not surprised by it, but email marketing 100% is our number one like revenue generating channel from a direct-to-consumer perspective, because our email, I try to keep like our newsletter and our subscriber base, and we have a massive subscriber base now, over 70,000 newsletter subscribers. Like they come to our newsletter because I try to keep it fun and educational and like from my personal voice and the voice of the brand. And it's not like, we do not do a lot of salesy content. Like we might have a sale once a month or do something that's fun around us. Like we were going to do something for the eclipse, actually. I'm not sure if we're going to pull it off in time, but we have these cute little heart-shaped nut butter cups, and we were going to do something like total eclipse of the heart. I don't know. Maybe I'll make it happen still. But I write all of our content, and I think our consumers really, like our customers love that. They feel very connected to the brand. So I'm not surprised that that's our number one revenue generating channel. I have to say TikTok is probably the surprising one. It's we just opened a TikTok shop like 2 weeks ago, and it's actually kind of wild how people are like going crazy for it without like zero spend and like just sending samples here and there. Like it's just, TikTok to me is not a platform where I would be like, oh, let me get out my card and like buy all this stuff. But people are buying on TikTok. And it's just, you know, we want to lean into that. And it's really cool because we're meeting people who are becoming brand ambassadors and like are part of our community now. It's just, I saw that a lot on Instagram, and now I'm starting to see that on TikTok too, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. TikTok is, I don't have a TikTok, but I keep an eye on
what's trending.
Yes. Like, and I have so many friends who just send me TikToks randomly,
sure.
Or we'll be in conversation and we'll say, I saw a TikTok or blah, blah, blah. And yeah. It's insane. Like how into it people are. And I know I've brought this up on this podcast before, and I can't remember the article, the publications for, I want to say it was like from The Cut or some,
okay.
Publication like that, but it really dove into the psychology behind TikTok and the way it presents everyone's content on there and how it's different from the other platforms and designed in a way to basically get you sucked in for forever.
100%.
And it's just brilliant. It's terrifying, but it's very impressive how they've set it up like that.
It's this double-edged sword where I'm a very conscious consumer of content. And the other night I was watching, and it was an entrepreneur, and I got served this entrepreneur, like giving this sage advice. And I was like, oh wow, I really like this. And then 20 minutes later, I was like, where did that time go? And I had just been watching all of his videos and I didn't even realize it. And it's brilliant how the platform is able to do that. So, but it is also terrifying at the same time, because it's at our fingertips. There's just so much available to us that can become emotionally draining. And so I think it's really, I always tell like my fellow founders as well, like we have to like set like a timer for ourselves for Instagram and TikTok, because you can only consume so much content and not compare yourself to other brands. Like people compare themselves to other people on the platforms, but as a founder, you compare yourself to other brands that might be like 10 years ahead of you. And you're like, oh, well, I want to do that. And it's like, okay, Ashley, you're only 3 years old. Like, you can do that in 10 years. So trying to figure out, like, for your mental health, how to like turn it off at some points, I think is really important. But they are both incredible sales channels and a great way to foster community. So that's why we spend so much time there.
I like it. And a question I always like to ask is a question you wish you were asked more frequently. And I'm going to use Shark Tank as an example, in that you'll see someone go on there. They'll say, we have great revenue numbers. We made $4 million this year. And then one of the sharks will be like, oh, and how much of that was profit? And they're like, we're not profitable yet because they've had to spend so much money going back into the business. And I don't think this is a shock to anyone listening, but the food and beverage market kind of saturated. There's a lot of different products out there. So what kind of capital do you need to really compete in such a saturated market?
That's probably the question that I wish more people asked, is how much capital do I need? How much, like, do I have to go and raise capital? How does that work? I think there's like two groups of founders that typically come into the food and beverage space, at least. And I come from CPG, so I see this a bit in the supplement world as well too. But it's usually like second time founders that may have had like a super successful exit, and they like know already, like, I'm raising capital, I know what I'm doing. They already have their path. And or maybe they had like a first failed business and they're like, I got this the second time. So that's one group. And then there's the second group that is, you know, tinkering around in their kitchen and doing something to like solve a problem. And it's, they're like, I'm going to bring this to market, and maybe I'm going to sell in farmers markets, or maybe I'm going to sell online. And because now that's a thing post pandemic. And it's really hard. It's so hard because you're holding physical inventory. And I think, to me, like, we sell snacks that are shelf stable. So I'm already so grateful for that. Like, we have a longer shelf. We don't have a very long shelf life, but we have a longer shelf life compared to my friends that sell in the frozen. Well, frozen does have a long shelf life, but you have to ship frozen all around the country. And we have a longer shelf life than my friends in perishable. So some people sell in the fridge. Some people sell, like, if you're selling perishable goods, like, you might have a 15-day shelf life. Like, there's yogurt companies that, like, you have to turn those goods over in 15, like, less 10 days. Like, it is wild the amount of capital you need for something like that. So I was told by a very wise friend that you should have 3 times the amount of capital that you think you should have, and you should give yourself about 10 more years than you think to get to a certain milestone. So for us, you know, I knew it was really important that I try to keep the business self-funded for as long as possible, and then to find really cool strategic partners that are also good advisors to help round out the business. And that is exactly what we did. So we raised an angel round, and we've got some amazing strategic partners that are part of our cap table that are excited. And some of them are food and beverage. Some of them are beauty focused. Some of them are like, have a focus on PR, and some of them have no idea what CPG even is, but they're like, I just want to learn. So that's been really cool. But I always tell founders that, like, you always need more because you want to innovate, right? You want, even if you get the product on the shelf, like, that is literally the bare bones basic step. Like, that product has to move off the shelf faster than your competitors in order for you to continue to see that success. So that's been our goal, is like, for 2 years, we built like this strong D2C loyal community, like, nationwide. So we know our consumers are like ready when they see us on the shelf. And now we're starting to roll out into retail doors nationwide, as opposed to the other way around, where it's like, you go to an aisle of protein bars, you're going to pick the bar that like you're used to buying. You might not pick a brand that's like, oh, I've never heard of them before, I'm not going to spend $3 to try that product. But if you've seen us, if you've interacted with the team, if you've liked something on Instagram or TikTok, like, you might be willing to try it. And that's exactly how we see so much trial.
Now, I don't have a food and beverage business. This is maybe not an apples to apples comparison, but when I wrote a book, like, that first feeling of holding it in my hands, of like being somewhere doing book launch events, mm-hmm. was just the coolest feeling in the world. Yeah. What was it like to see your products in stores?
It is. I mean, it's still wild. Even stores that like, so we launched into Blue Bottle Cafes nationwide, and we have a Blue Bottle Cafe, like literally like two blocks from where I live. And I pass the bars like every morning on my walk, and I see them like in the cafe. And it's like, I still get kind of choked up. And the first time that I saw them there, I was walking my, I have a 2-year-old daughter, almost two, and I was walking her in her stroller, and I was like, crying literally. And I recorded, I stopped. I was like, wait, let me record this moment on Instagram, because that's what we do now, is every time we're like thinking something exciting or we're thinking something where we're feeling like overwhelmed, I'm like, let me take out my phone and record this moment and share it with people, because it helps. I think that that's the thing I've noticed. But it's still surreal to see the product on the shelf. And we have two massive launches coming up that I can't share just yet. But one of them, I am traveling to go and like literally visit every single location or as many as I can. And I just can't wait. Like, I've already been thinking about like myself, like standing in front of the store and like holding the product and like asking a stranger to take pictures, because that's probably going to be the reality of it. But it is like, you made this. And like, we work with a manufacturer, like most brands do, is like, we work with a co-manufacturer, it's our recipe, and we work with someone to help scale it up and like make it in much larger batches. But we're technically like making it, and it's like, it's our brand, and we've created the packaging, and it's like your baby. And it's just, it's a very, very cool experience. But there is so much that goes into that like first part of like making the product and then seeing it on the shelf. There's just so much. So that's the thing, is I think founders get like so excited. They're like, oh, I can't wait to see my product on the shelf. But it literally, it could take a year to get there.
It's not an overnight.
It's not overnight. No.
Now, this is maybe more of a nerding out question, but
I love it.
I just did a, I also do writing outside of this podcast, and I just did a story about food safety in restaurants and in retail. And almost everyone I talked to had some kind of food science background. And I know you've got a background in food studies and biochemistry. Yeah. You work in consumer packaged goods, like you were saying. Is there something interesting in, I'm going to just generally say, the food science space that more people should know about?
I go back to my kick on natural flavors, because this is the, it's just the one thing that I would love people to just know more about. Like, natural flavors are in pretty much 99%, I'm making that up, but I'm approximating about 99% of packaged foods. Like, it is up there, because how do you get flavor? And in the food science world, there's three reasons you would use a natural flavor. And this is what I just would love more consumers to understand. And do I eat natural flavors? 100%. Like, I drank a drink this morning that had natural flavors. Like, it's just basically very difficult to avoid. And I wish more brands just didn't use them, because then we would get so excited about like eating a piece of fruit, as opposed to having this like strawberry flavored lollipop, right? Like, because, or I guess the best example is like, grape soda doesn't taste like grapes, or like a watermelon lollipop doesn't taste anything like watermelon, because 90% of a watermelon is water. So it has, it just, the flavor is more diluted. And, but why would we do that in this world if we could get like maximum flavor and really get everyone's taste buds excited? But the main reason that natural flavors are being used is because they want to manipulate your taste buds and, one, make you eat more, so you buy more. Two, it's cheaper than using the actual fruit or using the actual natural essence. And three, it's just, it looks good on an ingredient panel because it's natural. So it's just so wild to me that that is such a common ingredient that I would love consumers to just be like, oh, let me flip this over and it's here. Okay, maybe that, like, maybe I can find a better choice. And if I can't, like, cool, I know what this is now, as opposed to natural flavors having this like perception of being so good for us when it actually has no nutritional value. It's my pet peeve.
It's a good pet peeve.
It is. I probably talk about it way too much. It's just, I think like the transparency piece is like my biggest thing, is just tell me what's in my product. The best comparison is the perfume world, or like the beauty world, where you think about fragrance. is the same as a natural flavor, essentially. Fragrance has like 100 other like aroma particles. And I don't really know enough about beauty and fragrance to speak to this, but I was speaking to a beauty founder friend and they were like, oh my God, fragrance is like the natural flavor in the beauty world because it's like this catch-all term and it sounds really good because it's like, oh, it has a fragrance. It's going to smell good. But actually it's full of chemicals that could really be endocrine disruptors and disrupting our hormones. And we don't even know it. Like, it's just so wild. And it's not to make, I think like there's just so much in this world that's like, oh, well, you know, then we're afraid of everything. It's not to be afraid of. It's just to be able to like make a conscious choice, right? Like, I know that fragrance and natural flavor exists. Do I still consume products with natural flavor? Sure. But like, I know that if I can find something without it, I'm going to do that. So I think it's just that I would love more conscious choice out there in consumer packaged world. So we're getting there. Our consumers are demanding way more. And people are like questioning this more than I've ever seen before in like the past 7 years I've been in this industry.
I like, so we're heading in the right direction.
We're heading in the right direction. Yeah, it's pretty cool to see.
And speaking of, this segues nicely into our top three. You're almost off the hook here. And exceptionally topical because I'm running a 10K this weekend. I foolishly signed up for one to support a friend who was doing it. And I thought, this will be a good thing to do. We'll see.
I'm cheering you on. I get it. As a former runner, I'm going to say former because it's been a while since I've done a race.
I ran a marathon the summer after I graduated college, and I still can't believe I did that. That's so much running.
That's huge. It is so much running. It is. I still can't believe it. I have run only two marathons in my life, and I still can't believe I did them at all. It's like you kind of black out somewhere around mile 16, and it's like, did I make it? Was it? And I did. I just like do not remember anything.
Yeah. The only thing I really remember about the last 10 or so miles was I kept passing this guy. Like we kept passing each other and we'd do light trash talk as we went by. And then at the end, we just walked for a little bit. We're like, please be here in case I'm falling over.
I know. You make friends. That's the good thing. The running community, because it's so solo. And I think that's why I loved it so much. But because like you are alone with your thoughts and you really get like to think a lot, which is really great. But it's lonely. So being able to like have someone to like pass by or pass you by, it's so much better. So which 10K are you running this weekend?
It's the Cat Metro 10K here in Austin. Happens to be this episode will go live after it, but it happens to be the day before the total eclipse is happening.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's going to be jam packed these next few days.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great. And failing having a friend to run with, maybe you have some friends in your ears in the form of your top three songs to run to make your run a little more bearable.
You know, I should have come more prepared with this because this was the question that I wanted to talk about. And I'm like, wait a second. Because I have about three different running playlists and I like alter them. So I do know I'm going to give the artist. So the first one for me, and this is, it's really like this dedication to my mom. My mom was a huge Bon Jovi fan. So I always run to some type of Bon Jovi song that's like upbeat. So it could be Living on a Prayer, like anything that would be like a pump up, like get psyched song. And then I love to run to Imagine Dragons because they have a high BPM. So that's always a good one. And it's also like dark and moody sometimes. Like even like Demons is like a slow song to run to, but it's like, it's actually really like deep. And sometimes when you're running, you get into this like deep zone. So that's a good one. And then I usually just like a fun party song. So usually something from like Lady Gaga is usually on that playlist as well too. So I'm going to go with final answer, Bon Jovi, Imagine Dragons, Lady Gaga.
An excellent playlist. I need to get mine ready for this race. Although I'll just embrace the everyone.
Spotify. Yeah.
It'll be great. Well, Ashley, this was fantastic. Thanks for taking the time to chat. If people want to learn more about you, maybe want to pick up some BTR Nation bars, where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is btrnation.com. You can find us on Amazon. You can also now find us on TikTok Shop. And then we are in over 600 doors nationwide. We're in airports nationwide. So our store locator is on our website. And more to come, two big launches at the end of May. So
excellent. Well, we look forward to that. And of course, we have to end with a corny joke, as we always do. How fast does milk move?
I don't know. How fast?
It's pasteurized before you know it.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Good People, Cool Things is produced in Austin, Texas. If you were a fan of this episode, go ahead and hit that follow button. That helps more people hear the show. You can send me a message, joey@goodpeoplecoolthings.com. Thank you to all of the guests who have been on Good People, Cool Things. You can check out all the old episodes via goodpeoplecoolthings.com. As always, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.